everyone. Welcome to Bulbacast Season 2, Episode 8. My name is Nick, and now I'm going to introduce everyone. First off, we have TSS Killer from Pocket Monsters.
Hello there, peoples.
Satoshi Kun from the Bulb Garden Channel.
H is for hello.
Misty, Bulb Garden Forums Moderator and Smogan Forums Moderator.
Hello.
Kasumi, Bulb Garden Administrator.
Hello.
Archaic, Bulb Garden Webmaster.
Hi, everyone. How's it going?
PPN Steve, Key Bulba Garden Affiliate, owner of Pokemon Palace Network.
Hey, everyone.
And Pi, Bulba Garden Super Moderator. And now
hey,
I'm going to turn it over to TSS Killer.
Thank you very much, Nick. Very good intro there. Okay, we are going to get things started tonight. We're going to get things rolling on this wonderful cast of ours by calling Great Liver. So let's get him in right now. Hello, Great Liver. Welcome to Bulbacast episode number 8 of season 2.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Hey, all right. Hello and welcome.
Yes, indeed.
Hello.
And, And
hi, everybody.
Hello there. And, what might your question be this week?
Well, my question was, what role do you think Emerit, or whatever it's pronounced, is going to have in the anime, just because it's the legendary that Hikari saw in the first episode?
Good question. Generally, legendaries in the anime appear here and there, but you see the legendaries usually in the movies. Would I not be correct, or would I be correct?
I mean, like, Suicune appeared early in the Johto arc to Ash, but it's not like he really did anything big during the series there, did he?
Yeah.
Not well,
really.
He appeared in the episode with Yusine to save everything, and he appeared in the Celebi movie, so there's some significance there.
Was Ho-Oh a legendary?
Indeed
yes.
So.
Yeah.
He had his own episode, and didn't Ash see him on his, like, first day? Or his
well,
yes,
day
first
yeah.
app,
yep.
and then in 260s.
For Ho-Oh, the bell tolls.
Because actually, now that I think about it, when they see a legendary very early in the arc, it's usually promoting a future game that's going to have that legendary as one of the major
yep.
Pokemon.
Oh,
I mean, like, Suicune became the legendary that was the focus with Crystal, and
Ho-Oh was gold.
Ho-Oh was gold, so could
Did
this
he
one
early
perhaps
on
be...
In EG?
Not for AG is my as I recall.
Yeah, we didn't have any legendaries early there that I can recall.
Not really.
Mm, weird.
But
I'm really seriously doubting that this legendary is really going to play much of a role in the anime. Possibly a later movie, maybe not. But generally, in my experience, not really in the anime.
Maybe an episode. Maybe, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
Perhaps.
Maybe no, we can't forget.
Maybe just a slight appearance in the sunset or something.
Indeed.
Well, we do have to remember that they've said that this Diamond and Pearl arc will have a heavy side story with the whole galaxy thing and the legendaries. That was supposed to be the focus of it, from what we heard in the original promotional material.
Yeah.
So it's possible that this might be foreshadowing that somehow, but we really won't know until that happens.
Yeah,
right.
Sounds about right.
Okay, well, thanks.
Well, you have any more questions before we go?
No, that was it.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your question.
Thank you, Great Liver, for
calling. Thanks for calling in.
Have a nice night.
Thank you too. Thanks.
Bye-bye. All right, thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.
That was great.
Great calling once again. I like the question. Very very specific, and we like specific questions.
Yes,
we do. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to be a future Bulbacast call-in, it'll be nice for you to give us specific questions so we don't have to go jumbling all around the place to
You can also make comments and express your opinions on the Pokemon franchise
definitely.
If you'd like.
Exactly.
You
but
don't necessarily have
you know,
to use a question-answer format with your call-in.
Yeah, you know, it's like a preferred format, but it doesn't it's not really required.
It's not written
so.
In stone.
If you want to be, if you want to just speak your mind, that's fine.
Yeah, we'll accept it, you know.
Indeed so. So anyway, we're going to go right along here to our next call. And Next call in tonight for this wonderful bubble cast will be Kaluka-chan. Let's get her in now. Or him. Yeah, her, probably. Hello, Kaluka-chan. Welcome to bubble cast, episode number 8 of season 2.
Okay.
Yeah, hello there.
Hi.
Ooh, hello there.
Welcome to
bubble cast. Hello.
You are live.
Hello there. So, what might your question be this week?
Okay, I have a really good question, actually. I'd like to know why the all the electric types have the same freaking stat build.
Because they're lazy and don't want to change them around?
If really electric only has one weakness, three resistances, it would be perfect, if not for the fact that all the stat builds suck.
I'm
wondering if they're doing that because it's the same basic group in electric types.
Well, they're mostly all fast and have lots of special attack. I mean, if you think about lightning, it's like really fast. I mean, like the speed of light.
Yeah.
And special attack usually comes from the, I guess, because they're powerful electric attacks. Although, like, you can usually find some exceptions. Like the new electric Pokemon Rentora, or however you pronounce that, it has it actually has fairly low speed and high attack, as a matter of fact. And there is Ampharos, which is actually pretty slow. So you rarely find that most Pokemon within a type are actually consistent. They usually do try to have some variance, even if most of them seem to follow the same thing, like most psychics have high special attack and speed as well. But
it's like they're trying to rectify
all
that
things being Thunder Wave, they're already fast. I mean, the slow things get Thunder Waves, so they can screw up the fast things and then outspeed them.
Movesets aren't designed based on what the Pokemon would be good with. They're designed based on a specific analysis of abilities. I mean, Thunder Wave comes from the ability to, they come from the ability to produce electricity, and most electric types produce electricity.
That's so does Weezing.
Weezing does electricity?
Yes, it can use Thunderbolt.
Okay.
A lot of random things can use Run Thunderbolt. Person can use Bubble Beam. That doesn't make any sense to me, but that's...
Again, normal types are the exception to the rule, of course.
Yeah. Normal types. Poison types kind of do some weird stuff, too, though. They're kind of like normal, but not...
Well, aren't some of the moves...
They're like normal, except they have resistances.
They're abnormal.
Some physical reality in the world. I mean, like, you're
That's what the level up moves are supposed to be based on, the things that you expect the average ones to actually be able to use just from the physical reality. You've got all the technical machines that teach you the special moves that, well, maybe they're physically capable of doing it, but it's not something that they naturally do on their own.
Right. Okay, well, apparently Hariyama can use Invisible Tide by itself. That's what I've read. I don't know how it does it. But it does, and it has no point to doing so because special attack is lame.
I don't know.
There's a lot of attacks like that in there. I mean,
Diamond and Pearl.
In Diamond and Pearl. In Diamond and Pearl, for example, I had my Alakazam, and before I figured out which graphic actually meant, oh, so this attack's special type or this one's physical type, I was teaching it psychic moves purely on the base of what was the base power. And I originally figured out, well, wait a second, this psychic move is actually counted as a physical attack. That's why it's doing less damage than this other one, which is apparently still counted as a special attack. Because, of course, Alakazam's got utterly horrible attack values, as you'd pretty much expect from something like that.
Exactly. Mm.
But just because it's got those horrible attack values doesn't mean that the attacks it's going to develop leveling up should reflect that. They just reflect the physical things that guy's going to be capable of, even if he can't do it very well, as far as we're concerned.
Except for Invisible Tide on Hariyama, because I still don't know how it does that.
I think I know where that comes from. It's probably the whole Brawly thing, because Brawly is pretty famous for his surfing Makuhita or Hariyama. That just might be the thing behind that. I'm still looking for an explanation to Flamethrower on Manectric. The only reason I can think of for that is because was to set it apart from Raikou, who otherwise outclasses it completely. Otherwise, I don't get it, you know?
As far as the tide on the Hariyama goes, I'd say that probably comes from martial artists sitting themselves under waterfalls or whatever.
That's true.
Because I always thought Brawly was known for being emo and sitting his completely blackened out gym.
he's hella emo.
Ooh,
that's great. Oh. You got anything else for us?
Well, I probably have more, if not for the fact that I just worked 12-hour shift. All right, well, I'll try to not work any more overtime on Saturdays from now on.
Great.
All right.
All right.
Okay.
You can go ahead and kick me out now.
Thank you for calling. Thank you for calling, Crew. We'll get you back next week, yes. We'll help you next week, and hopefully we'll have you in there.
Yeah, and I'll have some more wit for you. I'll have better wit.
Okay.
Yay.
All right. Be safe now. Good night.
Good night.
Thank
you. Bye.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Arigato.
That was Kuruka-chan. Very good, really very good chatter.
We needed more game questions, and that's good.
That definitely takes the cake as the game question of the series so far.
Yes, I've had people asking me in chat and such, when are we going to cover games more, and that helped out.
Yeah. When are we going to cover games more? When you ask us the questions.
Exactly.
There you are.
While everybody recovers here from this last call, and we want you to recover by listening to this important message.
Welcome to Bulba Garden, the channel where you can go, have fun, and make new friends. Anyone is welcome. As long as you come with an open mind and a happy soul, we will welcome you in our chat. So please come and try out channel Bulba Garden today. You can get there from chat.bulbagarden.net. Come play with us.
Yay!
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Bulbacast episode number 8 of season 2. Now I'm going to kick things over to Winner because he has the question of the week, and please pay attention to him. Go right ahead.
All right. There were 3 questions of the week that I posed. One was I wanted you to design a legendary Pokemon in the dungeon that he or she or it is in. The second thing I wanted to do was for you to design a side quest game, such as maybe you've played the Ocarina of Time and you've played the archery game or the slingshot game. And the third was to think of a gym leader. You didn't have to answer all 3, but here we go. Jigglypaw, my idea for a legendary Pokemon would be that you, as you progress through the game, you would have to collect pieces of a legendary Pokemon from around the region that would have to fit together in some sort of jigsaw puzzle at the final dungeon, which revives it and enables you to catch it. How you progress through this mission determines the Pokemon you get. Perhaps 4 pieces of the dominant Pokemon are scattered across the world. Maybe there could be 2 pieces to choose from at each location, which would determine the type and stats of the final Pokemon pieces are put together in the final dungeon in a sort of ancient puzzle, and then he just goes on. I don't want to waste too much time, but
Pokemon pieces.
Yeah, it's a very good suggestion. At the end, Jigglypaw makes it that he'd like the jigsaw puzzle patterns to be contrasting colors, perhaps Aztec style.
Hmm.
Wolvorn has a lot of stuff to read, so here we go. The dungeons and puzzles. To catch my legendary, you must first capture the legendary trio that it is the leader of, like Regigigas and the Regis, which would be based on mythical beasts. Now, forgive me for mispronouncing this, but this is Tauron, the Minotaur, Lizelfo, the Hydra, which kind of sounds like Lizelfos from Zelda, so you got to be careful about that, and Fenix, the Phoenix. Each will have a part of a key to take it to the keymaker of a town, and they would put them together for you. The now completed key will allow you to access to the first area containing a clue to catching the legendary. The puzzle from then on would be similar to the Regis, in which you would have to decipher a code which would give you the clue to work out on the clue and follow it to the location where you'd solve a puzzle using an HM. And then he goes on. There would be 2 places where you'd get clues from, and then you'd go through a dungeon which would have many floors and solving many puzzles, perhaps with the end of it being the peak of a mountain. Again, I can't read all this because there is a lot. The last paragraph being, here you would enter a door and walk down a long path that appears to be floating in midair, and at the end there would be 4 silver statues set out in a square with a 5th gold one in the center. By walking up to it, pressing A, and revealing a set of stairs leading to a dome. For the legendary, he goes on to describe them a little bit. The legendary name is Fenrak. It's a dark steel type. It would be based on a werewolf. It would have a thick and gray and black coat, and its hair would be made of pure steel, and each hair is tapered to the point of these hairs, which would be shot out at a great velocity and be able to pierce a hole in anything. And then he goes on with that. But let me just say it's a very good description. I think it's extremely creative. With its stats being a werewolf, attack would be its main stat, and it would be level 85 when it's found. And then it goes on with the background. For a side quest, I would like to see something where people in distress ask for your help. Perhaps they've lost an item or a Pokemon, and then you go to help them by doing whatever you need to do to catch by using rare items, probably upgrades for your Poke-etch, to help, you know, do whatever they want in their side quest. I'm sorry for that.
Yes.
Sounds like Mystery Dungeon.
Indeed. All right. And finally, he finishes up. For a gym leader, I would either do a dark steel or electric trainer. Seeing as how my favorite type is electric, I'll do that. His name is Axel. He has blue hair with spikes, and he wears blue clothes and really cool shades. Then he goes on. His team would include Jolteon, which is his greatest companion, ever trustworthy. Rentora, the Intimidator, for first impressions. Manectric, the Flash, for quick finishes. Electrode, Suicidal, desperate times call for desperate measures. Electivire, the powerhouse for the stronger foe. And Metagross, the secret weapon when all else fails. The badge would be the Voltage Badge, the Battery Badge, or the Discharge Badge. He's not sure which sounds best. And the gym he would probably put as the 7th or 8th. He wants it towards the end, and he would include all sorts of traps and trap wires in his gym to make it very hard and to make it very hard to navigate and get through. Thank you very much, Wolvorn. That is a lot, so we couldn't read it all because we are on kind of a time. All right.
A great answer, though. I liked it.
Indeed.
Very, very creative.
Really enjoyed
it. A lot of detail.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
I'm sorry I couldn't read everything, but like I said, we're on time. All right. Yeah. It's a Viper. He only answered the gym leader question. Connor the Conductor, it's a musical type where the gym leader uses Pokemon as sound-based actions. His personality is playful, friendly, and somewhat vain and full of himself. The appearance would be curly purple hair and a red and black conductor outfit resembling Korotaku. His Pokemon would include Korotaku, Jigglypuff, Lodred, Petap, and Cricketot? Oh, yes, that's Koroboshi's image. And his gym would be around Gym 5 and live in a cultural town. Sexy Eddie, first off, he has an idea for a game where you travel to feudal-era Japan and encounter Celebi randomly. And this time, Pokeballs are invented, and they give insight to the origin of certain Pokemon, maybe even having four shrines dedicated to the four guardians of Asia. A black tortoise representing north, winter, and water. A white tiger representing west, fall, and steel. A red bird representing south, summer, and fire. And a blue dragon representing east, spring, and grass. And then he goes on to describe the shrines, which it is a lot. And once again, we're on a time thing. But it's a very good
These are very creative and detailed. All the answers so far.
Indeed.
Yeah, I wish there was enough time to elaborate on that.
But, bring out the really deep details, but, you know, we can always...
They can write a book with that, though. Yeah.
Always can go visit the forums over at Boba Garden and read the full answers to these questions. Most of them are usually posted there.
And remember, the address for those forums is bmgf.bobagarden.net, so please visit there. It's under the Garden Grotto section, and you will read that very, very detailed, those very, very detailed answers. And
to all of our questions
more.
Of the week.
We have a few more responses, if you don't mind. I'm sorry.
A couple more is good, yes. All right.
Infant Sceptile, he basically wants to have side quests where you collect crests. And basically, you would find the crests in very difficult to find dungeons with a lot of rooms, a lot of random battles, and total darkness. And he goes on to describe everything there. Again, can't read all of it. Now, here's where it really gets more interesting. He describes his gym leader, Lysander Wargrave. The only time I've ever heard of Lysander was in Diablo 2. It's on Island 3, and it's a gym located in the Berry Forest, which is very interesting. The types is that he centers around reptiles. The Pokemon he'd have are Sceptile, Rampard, Kecleon, Tropius, Torkoal, Dotytosu, Seviper, Venusaur, and Charmeleon. Lysander is an enigma wrapped up in a mystery. No one knows where he comes from or what he used to do, other than he appears to be eccentric and wealthy. His gym is an elaborate system of platforms hanging by ropes from trees at least 100 feet above the ground. He never boasts about his abilities, as his reputation does the talking. He pretends to be incompetent, often acting as if he were baffled. He offers suggestions that seem deranged, but turn out later to have been sound advice. He prefers long battles and thus tends to have his Pokemon dodge anything and never stay in the same position for long. So basically a lot of double teaming, probably a lot of switching, which if you're not used to it in a Pokemon game world can be very harsh, very annoying. Right? Mm. Porygandru? My legendary would be based off Garuda of Hindu mythology, a fighting flying type with the battle armor ability. It is part of the legendary trio, which would be Groudon, Kyogre, Rayquaza, and could be found in an ancient shrine. The shrine is a massive dungeon similar in style to the Tin and Bronze Towers in Gold, Silver, Crystal. And then he goes on. For the side quests, I would like to see the HMs used in their own games, much like the card e-reader games. I can see translating the diving game for your own Pokemon to dive down to find a sunken chest, a strength game where you push or throw stones or logs, and an aerial agility game for fly, etc. And wow. Is a gym leader... Is there a problem? Or,
no.
All right. His gym leader is Tabitha, and yes, he knows that it's the name of Magma's admin. The eighth badge, it's the Feral badge, black wings outstretched, but not folded like the Zephyr badge, which is Faulkner's badge. City would be Coal City, type would be Flying and Dark, and levels would be between 38 and 42. And then he goes on to describe Tabitha, a little bit about her. The Pokemon would be Sableye, confuses and disables Pokemon. Pinsir to counter ice and fighting types. Cacturne. Glion, which is Gligar's evolution, Diamond and Pearl. And Doncrow, the featured Pokemon, which would be Murkrow's evolution, Donkrasu. And finally, we have... Let me just see here. Oh, we have two more responses, my fault. We have Shiro and Fubuki. He's not quite sure what he would do for a legendary Pokemon, but without going all creation myth as Sinnoh has. However, he would like to see a legendary Pokemon that disguises itself as a human, kind of like Latias in the fifth movie. Question 2, the DS touchscreen creates a new plethora of possible minigames, nothing that necessarily gets you a trainer star, but could be played either single player or multiplayer. And then he goes on for the single player. He can't get the idea of a Pokeball throwing game out of his mind. So maybe something along the lines of the Safari Zone, something along with that. It's just how that I always wondered in Red, Blue, Yellow, Gold, Silver, Crystal, you could throw a Pokeball at something as big as a Snorlax and have a Pokeball miss. Nothing less than an Ultra Ball would even hit it. It would not be something integral or vital to the game, but it would nevertheless be a fun minigame to play. Perhaps you could get items for winning, maybe even a Master Ball for getting a certain extremely high score. Now, that's interesting. I mean, having items in the game as opposed to a trainer star, I wouldn't mind with that. Question 3, for the gym leader, once again, no extreme preferences. However, I want an evil-type gym leader as Giovanni was. Somebody on the dark side or with the villains of the game, or maybe someone who's really, really mean. I mean Shinji level. Give us a gym leader who is at the very least a total jerk. Plot implications aside, we would all be satisfied in winning the battle against him. Finally, we have Great Butler. I don't have a name, but the Pokemon would be of a vampirical sort. It would be somewhat like a fusion between a vampire bad idea already represented in Crobat's line and Dracula-esque human-shaped vampire. It would be slightly more human-like than Jinx, notable features being a long black cape on its back with feathery red wings beneath it. Its dungeon would be less of a traditional dungeon as it is a castle. Vampire, let's call him that for the purposes of this proposal, is hidden away in a casket on the top floor, and then he goes on to describe that basically it's kind of along the lines of the battle pyramid, where you have many different floors and you have to find a tile. Basically, when you encounter him, he would be level 75, and it knows Giga Drain, Poison Fang, Steel Wing, and Protect. Very nice moveset. For the minigame, he doesn't have an answer, and for question three, he would just use the characters created in his fix. I'm going with design with the assumption of rematchable gym leaders in Emerald. And that will do it for the questions of the week. For next week, it's just going to be very basic. You're going to make a prediction for this year for the Pokemon world. What is going to be monumental that happens in 2007? What do you think? For me, I think that the 10th movie is going to do very well in the box office. That's kind of a basic prediction, but, you know, whatever. If you want to make your predictions off the wall and, you know, take a stab at humor, you can also do that. And that's about it. So I'll turn back over to TSS.
Thank you, Winner, for that wonderful plethora of questions of the week. And we hope that we can hear your responses next week. And keep them coming. We don't get tired of them. So please keep them coming. We're going to move right along to our next call-in. And that next call-in will be Pokemon Trainer Lisa. So let's bring her in now. Hello, Pokemon Trainer Lisa. Welcome to Bulbacast Episode 8 of Season 2. Welcome.
Hey,
hi. Hello Lisa. There.
Hey, Lisa.
Hello, Lisa.
Welcome back to Bulbacast.
Thank you.
Back. Lisa.
Hi, everyone.
Hello
hi.
There.
Good to see you, dear.
How's everyone doing tonight?
Wonderful.
Very good.
Great.
Indeed, so.
Yeah, I just woke up, so.
So what's your question this week, PTL?
Okay. This is a very funny question, but one of my friends came up with it, so I decided to ask it.
Sure.
Great.
Okay. In the games, which Pokemon would do better in a Pokemon contest, a Magikarp or Feebas?
Feebas, they're beautiful.
Feebas.
More
about
crap. I'm pretty sure the Feebas wins it. That's from move selection.
Yeah, Feebas actually learns TMs.
Ah.
Magikarp.
Yeah, or Magikarp.
I gotta say, Feebas is the better content for
him. Yeah.
At least it's not laying dead on the floor.
Yeah, magic pretty much.
Thank you very much. Any more you have?
Yes.
Sure,
I have another question.
Go right ahead.
Okay. Now this question may have been asked before, but I am not sure. But okay, here it is. Generally speaking, why do hardcore anime fans dislike the Pokemon anime? Is it because they think it's childish, it's too old, or because they don't like the storyline?
I really think about
it's a combination of all three, basically, because a lot of
how it's marketed in America.
I mean, everybody's entitled to their own opinions, but I think it's more than that, more like a childish factor. I think that's the whole thing.
They picture it as a kiddie anime.
Exactly. Yeah.
And here in the United States, it's definitely targeted towards the younger audience.
Yes, indeed.
Mm. That's true.
Very younger audience.
Yeah, I mean...
Much better reputation in Japan.
Obviously, yes.
That's true.
And also, there's the fact that most hardcore anime fans, they don't care much for childish animes.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
There's also an opinion where they don't like very many dubs either. Most hardcore anime fans are more inclined to watch subs.
Well, I'm not necessarily sure that's true, but I think that shows that they see first as subs as opposed to dubs, they're fairly likely to have a better opinion of. I mean, if people had seen Pokemon subbed originally rather than have seen it dubbed, they would probably have the same kind of experience as they've got with Naruto, where they've seen that subbed first, and, I mean, let's be honest, Naruto is made for kids, but the hardcore anime fans love it.
Yes, it's
Naruto, weird.
That's why I saw the Naruto headbands, the Naruto headbands from the supermarket.
You wouldn't believe
it. First seeing the dub of Naruto, I think they would have been sure it was kiddie and never touched it.
You wouldn't believe how popular Naruto is here.
I can imagine.
I can imagine so.
I
just,
believe the,
just about the, half the people in my anime club have Naruto headbands on.
I believe the mass marketing of Pokemon also hurt its hardcore anime fan appeal.
Exactly.
Yes.
Because it's so widespread, it's everywhere. There's Pokemon this, Pokemon this, Pokemon...
Many anime fans don't tend to like mainstream stuff.
That's what they're seeing it as. It's mainstream now.
Very true.
Mm-hmm. Cool to hate popular stuff.
No, they'll like
I think...
It's not just that it's mainstream that's a problem. I mean, Evangelion went mainstream, and we all loved it, and we've still got a soft spot in our hearts for it, though we don't like how a lot of people still go around saying it's the greatest thing ever.
Right.
There's a lot of people who still like Dragon Ball Z, even though that's amazingly mainstream, but most of the fans of Dragon Ball Z are those who saw it before the dubs came out, who actually saw the original subs.
I've actually heard of people who saw when they're in the service, and they had friends from Japan who actually had videotapes of raw episodes. I've heard that more than one time from multiple people.
I'm sure a lot of it's opinion-based as well.
Yeah, exactly. Getting back to the whole thing, it's all opinion-based. It's basically what you think good morals against that anime series. Like I said, there's always two sides. There's always two sides to a fandom. Just remember.
Mm-hmm. I was going to mention that some people don't like the merchandising because they believe that they went overboard on the merchandising thing.
Oh yeah.
The marketing.
You back to the mass media mass production of it.
Yes.
Everything is everywhere. Oh, yeah, that in some fans' eyes can hurt the anime.
Name a series that hasn't suffered from over-marketing.
A lot of them.
I'd like to interject something, if I could, about what we were saying earlier about how some people seeing things dubbed beforehand will take something better dubbed. Personally, when I originally saw Pokemon dubbed, I was craving subs ever since I first saw it. And especially since the first Pokemon movie DVD came out, and they're talking about what all they cut and personality changes and such. I was like, wow, there needs to be a subtitled version. So it doesn't always run the fact or run that someone who sees something dubbed first will accept it, more.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, I think that pretty much sums everything up. Thank you, PTL.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you for calling. We'll try to
thank
get you next time. Alright, you have a good night.
Great. Good night, Lisa.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Good night.
Bye, everyone.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Great call.
Yep. Great calling. Yep. Great questions.
As always.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, indeed. We're going to get one more call in before we say goodbye, and that person is going to be Levisaur that's coming right now.
Hello, Levisaur.
Good to see you all again.
Indeed so.
Hello.
Hi.
What's your question?
Okay. First question off. I know that the Pokemon franchise isn't exactly the worldwide phenomenon it once was, yet it still maintains a prevalent presence in fandom today. I mean, why do you think it stayed as popular for as long as it did?
The fans.
As long as it has.
The games.
The games.
If it wasn't for
the hardcore
games,
fans
then
like us,
people would have forgotten about the anime.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you think about it, it's not really as popular. I mean, if you look at, Red, Blue, and Yellow sold something like 40 million copies, and Ruby, Sapphire, and Emerald sold 15 million. I mean, it's a drop, but you're starting at 40 million people. You're even a 50% plus drop. You're still going to leave a large number of fans. So that's just why their community still seems pretty...
Not only that,
I think both in games and anime, we've seen... I mean, it's more arguable for arguable for anime than for games, but I think we've seen a rise in quality as we've seen a drop in mainstream interest. Anyone who stick with the games can tell you, you play one of the more recent games, you go back to play Red, Blue, and Yellow, and you're wondering, what the hell was I thinking that this was an amazing
game? No, I disagree completely.
Yeah,
I disagree completely. I think I can still go back and play Red, Blue, and Yellow, even after playing Fire Red and Leaf Green, which totally leave it obsolete, but it's just, the charm is there. Some things like the fun glitches are there.
I think there's
still some appeal in them. I admit that the new games are nice, but I think... I don't know, maybe it's partly nostalgia, but I still think there's a lot left in the old
games. I think
games.
A lot of it has to be nostalgia.
Exactly.
I mean,
no, the original storylines...
The original games, they were great as far as concept and innovation, but they had a lot of glitches, and the graphics were really downright terrible.
But graphics don't make the game.
Come on, let's think about that. When did they first come
out? It's all a technology factor.
98.
Yes.
Also...
They were ready for the
GB, the original Game Boy. Of course,
the original Game Boy wasn't in color. Remember that?
Yeah,
black and white. Right,
you know why
it wasn't black and white?
Terrible, guys.
Greenish gray and white, and kind of lighter gray.
As an artist, I gotta say, there's a lot more. The Red, Blue, and Yellow graphics weren't well done. You can't even blame it on the system.
They were redone for their
Red, Blue, Yellow
too.
Graphics were done to the same standard as Link's Awakening on the original system. There was nothing wrong with them.
Here's a great comparison right now. If you take the original Red and Blue, Red, Blue, Green games, you can consider that as watching a 1950s Telecine. Today's games are more of a matter of HD quality. The 1990s, as far as technology is concerned, if you could think it that way.
I gotta admit, I don't like the fourth generation release of Pokemon because there's a lot of weird monsters, there's a lot of legendaries, and there's a lot of evolutions and pre-evolutions, whereas there's not a lot of just good old regular monsters.
But
overall, I don't mind most of the evolutions and pre-evolutions. I mean, come on. Magneton's evolution. You cannot tell me that that's not awesome.
You know, some are awesome, but some really have, in my opinion, really don't have much of a place. And it's not completely nostalgia when you still enjoy Red, Blue, or Yellow, because that has the most original set of cookies.
Well, you got to figure some of them are fillers. They had to fill in space. Yeah. They had to make something up.
Red, Blue, and Yellow have the best Pokemon. I think
you'll find
few people who disagree with that.
You'll almost always find me with original Pokemon on my team.
Mm-hmm. Indeed.
Oh, the first generation was the best one, design-wise.
Yes.
Mm. Well, King.
I think that there's a lot of good ones.
I will say, though, my favorite Pokemon aren't really the first generation ones. I mean, Heracross, the whole Routes evolution line.
Oh, yes.
Most of my favorites don't really come from the first generation. I'd probably put the first generation Pokemon among, probably say they're better overall than the ones that came from the later generations in general, but my favorite ones tend to be some of those that came later.
Yeah,
I like a few of the later ones myself.
My favorite one actually is Diamond and Pearl.
I think in every generation, if you look, you can see a lot of really good ones and bad ones. Like, in the original generation, there's a lot of really good ones. But then you have ones like, let's face it, is Poliwrath really an original evolution?
No.
It's a tadpole. Like,
how many evolutions of a tadpole can you have?
Yeah. Politoed. Politoed was a much better evolution, I thought. I think the first generation, it's like Archaic said, they land more middle range. As you get up into the later generations, they get a little more extreme. You have ones that you absolutely love, and then you have ones that you absolutely loathe.
Going back to something Pi said about a lot of legendaries in Diamond and Pearl, I'm kind of a sucker for legendaries, because... A, they tend to be very useful, and B, they tend to be very cool looking. So, you know, it's like, why not? Give me some more legendaries.
Yeah, but you know, don't you like
13 of them?
Don't you like the Pokemon based on on something real?
Nah, I'm more of a mythical kind of person. I like mythical stuff, so that's part of
why
my life.
I guess part of it is personal taste. I guess part of it is personal taste, because quite frankly, yeah. I like legendaries, but I like the regular monsters more. I never use legendaries in a team. I think that a lot of people would be better battlers if they didn't rely on legendaries as much. I mean, that's a personal opinion sort of thing. It's up for debate, as it's always been.
Yeah. I'd rather play with a team I built myself instead of saying, hey, I just captured this legendary. I'm going to kick the butt of the game with it instead.
Exactly.
Anyway, we're going to have to say goodbye to Blonosaur. So,
yeah. All right. Thanks for your call, Blonosaur.
Thanks for call.
All right. Bye-bye.
We're going to make this thing short and sweet because we have a lot of comments saying that we take too long to say goodbye. So I'm just going to say this one thing. The plugs, people, you have to go to the websites that I tell you to right now. You need to go to BubbleGarden.net, PokemonPalace.net, and PocketMonsters.net. We need your hits. We need you to visit there. And the IRC server, once again, and the IRC channels are irc.system.info and irc.pocketmonsters.net. Pound Bulbacast and Pound Pocket Monsters. And remember that Pound Bulbacast opens up at 1 hour before the cast is supposedly beginning. So please make sure you're going to be there. I'd like to thank everybody here. Satoshi-kun, Kasumi, Archaic, Misty. I especially for coming back. PPN Steve, Winter, and our call-ins, Pokemon Trainer Lisa, Blonosaur, Great Liver, and finally, Katakuchan, yes, indeed so. Thank you for calling. First-time callers are great. This is Tears of the Killer saying, stay safe, everybody, and good night.
Down there, Minnow.